childhood's house. Had I but time, oh, I could tell you. This is the story of a child born to Jewish immigrants on the Lower East Side of Manhattan long, long ago. She never became famous, but she got out of the ghetto. Listen to her remembering. Earliest memory. Pictures. Bright colors. Give me. Jumbled patterns. What is it? What is it? The spoon. Nearer and nearer. Something warm. Pungent. Chicken fat. No, no! Thrashing. Pinched nose. Gasping. Down it goes. Yeah! Here. Pretty pictures. See the queen? See the king? See the jack? Give me. Bright colors. Jumbled. What is it? What is it? The impress of ice cream. When I was 5, my mother promised me chocolate ice cream tomorrow if I would have my tonsils out. I finally gave my consent. She took me to the free clinic at Eye, Ear, and Throat and abandoned me to white nurses who dressed me in a white smock and put me into a white room with a batch of other white smock children. One after another, we were plucked off. I hid under a table and was the last to go. They asked if I could count to 10. Sillies. I held my breath and counted way beyond 10. Then I gasped for air and darkness. I awoke to whimpering in the white room. Is it tomorrow already? I asked. Is it tomorrow already? But nobody was listening. And it was still today. When the ice cream finally came, it was white, and it didn't taste the same. Childhood's house. Terror crouches under the stairs in the gas-jetted hallways of childhood's house. In dreams, I flee him, taking the steps in pairs, then 4 and more, leaping the flights, lunging round landings, plunging breathlong down the hallways of my throttled heart. Saturdays with Father. My father owned a grocery store on Broome Street. He could cut a slab of butter out of the tub to the ounce. He never had to take off a little or add a little. He could do the same with cream cheese or farmer cheese. He churned the ice-cold milk in the big cans to a froth, and with a long-handled dipper poured just the right amount into the ladies' containers. If somebody was silly enough to ask whether the eggs were fresh, he punched a little hole in the shell of one and sucked it out and swallowed it. My mother helped in the store, but the ladies wanted my father. He could make them laugh. And he was handsome as a movie star. On Saturday mornings, when the store was closed, I would go into my father's and mother's bed. One time, when I was cuddling next to my father, I wet the bed. My father jumped up and yanked me out and spanked me. But I didn't purposely do it. Saturday mornings, my mother dressed me in pongee dresses with panties to match, which she had made and embroidered all by herself. And she put white shoes on me that buttoned with a hook, and she fed me baked apples with sweet cream. And then I took my father's hand, and we went for a long walk to the bank, just the two of us, and we put all the money from the store into the bank. You weren't supposed to touch money on Saturdays. But my father said he didn't believe in such things, because he was a socialist. Saturday afternoons, we all walked about 20 blocks to my grandmother's house on Lewis Street and saw all my aunts and uncles. My grandmother would give me chickpeas to eat, hot and peppery. Uncle Philip would throw them into the air and try to catch them in his mouth and miss. Sometimes in fine weather, we all went for a stroll along the upper promenade of the Williamsburg Bridge. Everybody was dressed up and laughing and happy. A debate with superior force. I was stubborn, everybody said. But I wasn't. I was right. My father said, I am the father. You must do whatever I say. Only when it is right, I answered. No, you must obey whether it is right or wrong. I will show you. My father took a glass from the table. He placed it on the floor. Pick it up, he said. No, I won't, because you purposely put it there. Pick it up. No, I won't. For the third time, pick it up. No. My head drooped lower and lower. I could not look at my father. Swiftly, he turned me upside down on his lap and whacked me and whacked me. In the end, I picked it up anyway. But he was wrong, and I was right, wasn't I? Left back. To be left back was a terrible shame. I was left back once at kindergarten. You're only 4. You need 1 year more to go to 1A. But I cried anyway. I don't care. It isn't fair. Where babies come from. When I was 5 and my brother Norman was almost 3, the doctor came to our house on Broome Street, and from a black satchel he took out a blue blanket, and in it was a baby. And that's how I learned where babies come from. P.S. The baby was Philip, but he didn't stay very long. My Uncle Dave and Aunt Ida, who had no children and were very lonesome, took him away, and he lived with them happily ever after. Eggs. I hated soft boiled eggs. I liked hard boiled eggs, scrambled eggs, fried eggs, but I detested runny, snotty, soft-boiled eggs. Why did my mother and father beat me with a strap? Just because I couldn't eat them. A ride from the country. You're a big girl now, almost 6. Take good care of your brother, said my mother as she seated us on the train at Livingston Manor. Remember, don't get off until the last stop. Bobby will be waiting at the station in New York. We had gone to the country because my mother was sick and needed fresh air. But we were bad, and my mother couldn't take care of us. Besides, my brother broke a chamber pot and got glass in his foot and had to go to New York to fix it, his foot. So now we were all alone, my brother and I, on the train. But all I remember of the whole ride is that my mother gave a quarter to a lady sitting near us to buy us 2 ice creams, and she never did. lilacs. The lilacs sway heavy in the afternoon sun. Their fragrance drives me. I climb the porch railing to let my fingers know their shape. Unappeased, I nuzzle among the green leaves at their firm, forever cool sweetness. Once in the country. Once in the country, in a summer rooming house, I saw my mother and Aunt Ida taking a shower in an outdoor shed. Their breasts were so full and heavy, I took one peek and ran away. A quarrel. I awake early one morning to the sound of angry voices on the stairs. We are living in the village of Fallsburg now, above the big general store my father has bought into to get the benefit of the country air. I run to the door. Three figures are frozen in attitudes of violence along the stairwell. My mother at the top of the stairs is tugging at my father. Come, come, let it go. It's only money. He's crazy. He'll kill you. My father is pulling away from her, his fists raised, ready to hurl himself at his country partner, that goy, that thief, that swindler, who stands at the foot of the stairs with a rifle aimed upward. My mother sees me. Get back, she cries. I stand, unable to move. She is torn between saving my father and saving me. She begins to cough horribly in the midst of racking sobs. She is choking. My father turns, leads us back into the apartment. The moment is broken. We waken my little brother. We gather our few things and prepare to leave. A horse and buggy takes us and our belongings a mile up the road to a room in the country. My father never tells me exactly what happened, only that he has been cheated of thousands of dollars. There is a suit. Nothing ever comes of it. But I am forever shocked. My father's image has been slightly cracked. He is not the smartest, shrewdest, cleverest man in the world. In dreams, the violets. In dreams, I pick the violets still. The woods are shadowy with freckling sunlight. The earth is moist and dark. The little violets are everywhere, everywhere. I am kneeling, lost in their delicate stems. I hear my name searching, echoing. Sylvia, Sylvia. Presents. When I was six, more exciting than blue and white tea sets, more exciting than sleeping dolls, more exciting than little nurse kits, were the presents for playing school. Double-decker pencil boxes with sliding covers smelling of wood, pen holders with steel pen points you had to spit on before they would write, pads of paper with mixed-up colors, and best of all, the notebooks, little ones, big ones, fat ones, skinny ones, lined ones, plain white ones, whose pages I numbered as soon as I got them with feverish fumbling. Aunt Becky and Uncle Herman. In my grandmother's house, when I lived there on the east side, Aunt Becky was the old maid. She was already 25, and what was worse, she was too tall, 5'5". She worked as a maid in a judge's house, and brought home stolen sheets and silverware and things. On her nights off, she would sit at the kitchen table and dice orange peel smaller and smaller just for fun, and then she would throw it all away. Sometimes she played fantan using dried lima beans for pennies. She would tell funny stories about the judge's children, how fresh they were, and then she would laugh and cry all together. They kept taking her to the matchmaker, and finally they found Uncle Herman. He was very tall, thank God, and had a tiny head which drooped to one side like a wilted flower on a long stem. His voice was very low, too, but Aunt Becky said, "You watch, I'll make a man of him." His father had had a shoe shop, but he was dead, and the money had been divided among 5 sons and 3 daughters, so there wasn't that much left for Uncle Herman. But he was rich to us. He had a big open Studebaker and took us for rides around the block. Once we went for a drive into the country, but Aunt Becky was afraid of the hills and made him stop the car at every hill while she got out and walked. Uncle Herman had no job and didn't know what to do. He didn't like shoes, and he didn't want to stay in the store. Aunt Becky said he should sell the Studebaker and buy a medallion and become a taxi driver because he knew how to drive. So he did. He was a very gentle taxi driver, drooping his head to one side and speaking low so you could hardly hear him, and staying away from drunks and coloreds and whores and other dangerous or dirty people, and not staying out too late either. They lived in an apartment in the Bronx, and Aunt Becky just stayed home and took care of her own house, which was better than being a servant in somebody else's house. Funny thing happened soon after they were married. Uncle Herman was sued by a bleached blonde for breach of promise. Everybody laughed, but still the case came to court. They didn't let me in. I was too young, they said. It was in all the papers. Uncle Herman lost and had to pay up every month. Aunt Becky cursed and laughed and cried all together. But I think she was glad anyway to have a man. They never had any children. Grandfather. I don't know whether my grandfather was good or bad. He was very handsome, very lean, with black curly hair and long sideburns which he combed and curled every day. He was neat and clean. He was very angry with my grandmother, who was round and sloppy, whose shapel was always a little to one side, who sat at the window all day long knitting, though I never saw anything she made, and left the dirty dishes all over, except on Fridays, when she cooked for the Sabbath chicken and soup and fish and simmers, and baked collie and cake with good-smelling yeast, and scrubbed all the wooden floors and spread the newspapers over them. I have seen my grandfather silent, with one stiff-armed move, sweep from the table the dirty dishes and leftovers, all crashing to the floor, before he would let my grandmother set a plate before him. "Drunkard," she would shout. "Whore," he would spit. And you know, my grandfather was a drunkard, even though he sang in the synagogue on Saturdays. After work, pressing pants, when he had work and money, which was not so often, he would go to the saloon with the swinging doors on the corner. Once I saw him coming stumbling down the street, and all the children made a circle around him, dancing and clapping and shouting, "Shikka, shikka, shikka," which means drunkard, and they wouldn't let me break the circle, although I was crying, and I ran to tell my grandmother grandfather was coming. My grandmother was very poor and didn't have any money and tried to borrow from everybody, but nobody had any. So she cried, "What shall I do? What shall I do?" one time, and once only, in the middle of the week, my grandmother dressed up neat and clean, pushed the babushka back, slid her Sabbath shetel on, and took me solemnly by the hand, and we marched through the streets to the shop where my grandfather was working. Grandmother spoke to the boss, and he gave her grandfather's wages. "Before he can drink it up," she said. On the way back, grandmother was glad, but she was shivering. And when my grandfather came home, he was raging and smacked her hard on the face. And grandma grabbed the big kitchen knife and ran and locked herself into the dark bedroom to kill herself, she said. And I hurled myself at the door and shook the handle and banged and screamed and cried, "No, Bobby, no, 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 no!" And my grandfather turned the house upside down looking for the money, but he couldn't find it, because grandma had rolled it up inside her stocking, and my grandfather went slamming out of the house and down to the saloon anyway. Later, my grandfather died. Cancer of the stomach from drinking, they said. When they came for the coffin, I hid in the barber shop downstairs because I was afraid. But they made me come to the cemetery anyway. And I saw them put the coffin with my grandfather inside into a hole in the ground. I don't think my grandfather liked my grandmother. You see, he didn't choose her himself. He didn't even ever see her until the wedding. And by that night, her hair was already shaved off, and she was wearing the shetel. A Walk with My Brother. When I walked with my little brother, hand in hand, to my Aunt Anna's house on Stanton Street, a few blocks away, I always made sure that he was on the outside, near the edge of the sidewalk, and I was on the inside, near the cellars, so that in case the black hand reached out and grabbed at us, he could run away and escape. And I would be the one to be caught. Grandmother's House. My grandmother's house on Lewis Street, on the Lower East Side, was a three-room flat in a tenement that stood between the barber shop with its pole at the right and the grocery store with its milk cans at the left. At the end of the block to the right were the open-air markets that sprang up on certain days under the Williamsburg Bridge. Cages and cages and cages of live chickens and ducks and turkeys. At the end of the block to the left was a saloon. You mustn't go there. The roof of the grocery store formed an alleyway we could step out on from our dining room window. You mustn't go too near the edges. But my Uncle Philip, who was only 2 years older than I, did. He would crawl to the front edge and spit down on people just passing by in the street below, and then flatten out on his stomach so nobody could see him. And sometimes he picked up cigarette butts and hid under a bed to try to smoke them. In the alleyway there was always garbage splattered, thrown in brown paper bags or wrapped in newspaper from the windows above. And there were cats yowling and fighting and spitting. You mustn't go near the cats. They were treacherous and would turn on you, but you had to have them to catch the mice and the rats. To get into my grandmother's house, you walked up one flight of stairs. At the head of the stairs, you faced two toilets that had little orange wrappers like tissue paper and torn newspapers to wipe yourself. One toilet for the two flats in the right hallway, and one for the two flats in the left hallway. We lived in the flat in the left hallway, on the right-hand side, that gave on to a dark air shaft. Mrs. Zeiler, you mustn't bother her, lived opposite us on the front, which cost more money. But sometimes she let me sit by the window and look out upon the street. My grandmother's door was wood on the bottom, and frosted glass on the top, and sometimes when somebody was angry and slammed the door, the way my grandfather did, the glass shattered. You went to the kitchen painted red, with its big black stove and its sink and its washtub, where my grandmother bathed my brother and me, one after the other, on Saturday nights. It had a leather lounge to sleep on, and a wooden table to eat on and to play cards on. It had gas lights on the wall. Later on, when the electricity was put in, and the bulb was hanging from the ceiling, my Uncle Philip kept pulling the string to make it go off and on, off and on. It cost a penny every time he pulled it, they said. But he did it anyway, and my grandmother was angry. To the left of the kitchen was the dining room, with a heavy round table in the middle and straight-backed chairs. But mostly it had beds against all the walls. And that's where I slept with my Aunt Lena, and heard the cats crying all night outside the window, and heard the horses clop-clopping in the early morning. To the right of the kitchen was a tiny bedroom, dark, with one big bed for my grandparents. It was scary, and I never went in if I could help it. Better not go looking for my grandmother's house on Lewis Street. You will not find it. They took the whole street away to make a project for poor people. And Garrick Street, too, where the horses for the milk wagons were stabled. You will not hear their clop-clop any more, either. Games. When nobody was looking, the boys played doctor with me in my grandmother's house. Once they tried to turn me over on my back and stick the make-believe thermometer up the front, but I ran away and hid. I never let them. More games. Red Rover, Red Rover, I dare you come over. Pepper, salt, mustard, cider, how many bullets killed the Kaiser? Simple Simon says, 1, 2, 3, O'Leary, I spy Sister Sari sitting on a bumbleberry just like a chocolate fairy. These are the games we played, and Russian Seven, and Hit the Penny, and Statues, and Hide and Seek, and Double Dutch, and Potsy, and Hopscotch, and Marbles, and Baseball Cards, and the boys built wagons, and the girls embroidered on linen stretched across hoops, and Let's Play School, Who'll Be the Teacher, and Let's Play Doctor. I don't want to be sick. I want to be the nurse. And let's play house. I want to be the mommy. Wishes. We played wishes. If you could have just one wish in this whole wide world, what would you wish? Some said $1 million. Some said to never die. Some said to be president of the U.S. I said to know all the answers. My mother. Your mother's upstairs. Hurry up, she's waiting. She wants to see you. Slowly I climbed the stairs and opened the door. Somebody was nudging me forward. That's your mother. Go give her a kiss. Go on, go on. My mother was sitting on a straight chair in the middle of a space in my grandmother's kitchen. She was coughing into a handkerchief. Coughing, choking, her face red, her body heaving. Her eyes streaming. Don't force her, she managed to say. Don't let her come near me. And I was afraid to go near her, this suffering stranger who was my mother. when the bell tinkled.
In winter, roasted peanuts in the shell, hot chestnuts, baked sweet potatoes, buttery chickpeas, potato knishes. In summer, watermelon slices, pineapple rounds, chunks of fresh coconut, scraped ice with syrup, Italian ices in little white cups, Eskimo pies, Charlotte Russe, hot corn on the cob. These are the things we ate on the street when the man came around and the bell tinkled.
The library. The library on Houston Street opposite the park was a solid stone building. Inside, it smelled of polished wood and books. The counters were big and heavy. The banisters leading to the children's section upstairs were steady. Magic beams of light with dust motes slanted through the high windows. The place was hushed and solemn. I entered every Friday afternoon on tiptoe, looking for colors I had not read before. I touched with familiar affection the red, the green, the yellow, the blue, the purple fairy book. I was up to the mauve, the crimson, the magenta, the emerald, the rose, the lavender. What would I do when the colors ran out? More about books. Aunt Lena read True Story and True Romance. Uncle Manny read Argosy. Aunt Bella couldn't read. Uncle Philip and I read Frank Merriwell and Nick Carter and Horatio Alger. Then we collected them and took them to the used bookstore and exchanged them for others. But we always got back less than we gave. Listen, listen. Eyes darting, mouths buzzing, they swooped and they swarmed, hissing. Listen, listen. Your father, that woman, your mother, she'll die. Your children, he'll leave you. He's bad. That woman, he boards in her house. Speak to him. Stop him. Now, now. To me, they came with that story. My grandmother, my aunts. It's a lie. I won't do it. He's my father. I love him. He never would do it. I know it. I know him. And you know, he never did. Report cards. My mother saved all my report cards. They all said AAA. When my brother showed his report card, my father said, "Your sister's is better." And that's how my brother, who was smart, got a complex about wanting to be smarter. My grandmother had 14 children. My grandmother had 14 children. I knew only 9. The others had died before I was born. The oldest was Aunt Anna, who went around with a pursed mouth as if she didn't approve. But she was always boasting of her 2 children, especially her daughter, who came to be called by the rest of the family behind Aunt Anna's back, "Mine Miriam." Aunt Anna was said to have been beautiful, but she had aimed too high and lost, and now she was married to Uncle Max, who was the shadow of a shadow, and crept around on silent feet
and snooped into drawers and closets so that everybody locked up against his visits. He peddled pies on the street and had to keep moving because he had no license. My aunt loomed over him with her superior height and her sharp tongue. But he had one skill. He shined shoes and boots beautifully. And he was kept busy doing it. Aunt Anna was a wonderful housekeeper. She never let Mine Miriam help. Mine Miriam was going to grow up and marry a rich man. We envied Aunt Anna a little bit, because she had a toilet in her house and not out in the hall like us. Uncle Dave was next, white-haired and lisping with a baby face. He didn't like me. He liked only boys, especially my brother Philip. He was married to Aunt Ida, who moved nice and slow, and was kind, and made delicious lima bean soup, and potato pancakes, and chocolate cakes. They opened a restaurant, and when they were tired and had enough money, they closed it and did nothing for 2 years. Then came my mother. I cannot tell you about my mother. She was not like the others. If I tell you she was gentle and shy, and made all things beautiful with her knowing hands, and sang the songs of long ago, you will say, well, she is your mother. But mostly my heart is sad for my mother, who came alone to America and worked to bring all her family here, and fell forever in love with my father, and married him against all their warnings, and had 3 darling children, and lost them all, my mother, who loved so deep the tears washed her eyes, who spilled her life's blood into her cupped hands so as not to dirty Uncle Manny's car on the way to the last stop, Montefiore Hospital. Then came Aunt Becky. I told you about her. And then Uncle Louis, who started a business and made lots of money, and later chucked it all up, wife, children, home, business, to go dancing with a partner in dance halls in Miami, Florida. And then Aunt Lena, soft and pretty, with whom I slept at my grandmother's house, who sewed her own wedding dress with thousands of tiny beads, and whom I loved so much until I came to live with her after the orphanage and found out she did not have enough love to love me. And Uncle Manny, the silent one, ice skating at dusk in the shivering park, playing with paints at night on the dining table, making designs to astonish his boss, dreaming of riches and sample cards, and later making it. And then Aunt Bella, only 5 years older than I, who couldn't do the homework, with whom I had to share one pair of roller skates, and who wouldn't take turns so that each of us learned to skate like a scooter. Uncle Philip was the youngest. He was mischievous and chubby, the clown of the family. I told you about him. He made up nicknames that stuck. Watch out for him.